The following is an excerpt from the Science Podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
Finally today, I'm here with science contributor Meghna Sachdev, filling in for David Grimm, who's here to give us a rundown of some of the recent news from our daily news site, news.sciencemag.org. So first, Meghna, a story that might help me prepare for that trip to Antarctica that I've always been meaning to take.
Well, yes. Yeah. So as we know, Antarctica is very cold and it's very far away. So it's one of the most pristine environments on Earth. But scientists now, well, one of the things that they've been worried about is plant stowaways, which are basically non-native plant species that visitors are bringing accidentally and could end up actually growing there.
So plant stowaways, is there really a large enough number of people visiting Antarctica for this to be a danger?
Well, the number of people visiting is increasing. And with climate change, Antarctica is also just going to get more hospitable. So this is actually a little bit of a concern.
All right. So I'm looking at my shoe right now and I don't really see any seeds on there. Is this how much is this phenomenon actually happening?
Well, so for the first time, researchers actually did a continent-wide study of about 2% of the visitors who were visiting Antarctica. And they vacuumed their gear and they, you know, checked their pockets and things, and they got about 2,700 seeds. And from that, they kind of figured out that that's probably about 71,000 seeds just in one field season. So scientists actually, turns out, are worse than tourists at bringing in seeds. About 20% of tourists were unwitting seed smugglers, and about 40% of scientists and their teams had them. And the average person who had these plant hitchhikers actually had about 9 seeds on them. So it does seem to be a bit of a problem.
So what kinds of species are we talking about here?
Well, what's a bit of a concern is that about 50 or 60% of the seeds seem to come from cold climates. So they looked at the types of seeds and they looked at visitors' travel habits, and it seemed like a significant percentage of the seeds might have a chance of taking hold. Apart from that, with climate change, Antarctica does seem like it might become a little bit more hospitable. And by about 2100, scientists think the risk will increase pretty dramatically. So there's a lot that goes into whether or not a non-native species will actually take hold. But at least we know now that Antarctica is not completely immune to something like that happening.
So is there anything that can be done to prevent this? You know, as a traveler to Antarctica, what can I do to keep myself from smuggling in seeds?
Well, it's actually not that hard. Visitors basically just need to clean their equipment, empty pockets, and mostly just vacuum everything you bring in. And they also say that scientists should watch where they store their gear. And as long as everything gets a good vacuuming, things should probably be okay.
All right. And on to a story about everyone's favorite ingredient in wine. The yeast.
Yes. So in Sicily, a lot of winemakers still follow the old ways. They might not be stomping around on the grapes with their feet, but they're still using old stone troughs and things like that. And so researchers thought they'd sort of see what was going on with the local wine yeast.
And what is going on with the local wine yeast?
Well, actually, what they found is that the local yeast, a lot of the strains, they're actually as good as, or sometimes even better, than commercially available, widely sold yeast.
So when we talk about local wine yeast, what exactly does that mean? If it's not coming in a jar from a supermarket, how are they finding it? How are they using it?
Well, one of the ways in which, you know, you can get sort of wild strains of yeast is they just sort of grow. So modern wineries are pretty serious about keeping things clean. There's a lot of scrubbing. And, you know, part of following the old ways sort of means there isn't quite as much cleaning going on. So, you know, grubby fingernails or poorly scrubbed tubs also mean that there's a little more wild yeast action going on.
Wow. And so you said that they actually do stack up to widely sold yeasts. How did scientists figure that one out?
Well, scientists used 2 of the local strains to ferment local grapes. So they studied them, and the alcohol content looked good, and they also seemed to be churning out esters, which is what a lot of people want in their wine because it makes it smell good. Mm. But, you know, esters and alcohol content is not necessarily what we're looking for. So they also did a taste test. Mm. And it turned out that, sure enough, Sicilian wine experts preferred the wine made by the local yeast.
No kidding. So if I own a winery, a commercial winery, should I start to think about moving towards some wild strain of yeast?
Well, I think what this means basically is that microbial diversity is a good thing. It's good to have lots of different kinds of yeast available, and it's good to have lots of different strains.
So is this part of Sicily the only place where we can find these wild strains of yeast?
Well, no, actually, scientists so far have described less than 1% of the estimated 700,000 strains of wine yeast worldwide. So there's definitely lots of other yeast to discover.
And a lot of potential for a really delicious wine.
Exactly.
Okay, and for our last story today, we are digging up more dirt on the Iceman.
Yes, so Ötzi the Iceman, he was a naturally preserved mummy that they found melting out of a Alpine glacier in 91, and they've been poking and prodding at him and finding out all sorts of things, trying to figure out what he last ate. But what they just did is they sequenced his genome, and we actually ended up finding out a lot of cool stuff.
So what kind of stuff do we find out?
Well, we knew that Ötzi had severe arteriosclerosis, but what we were surprised to find out, or what scientists were surprised to find out, was that he had a genetic predisposition to it. Mm. And, well, that's surprising because he didn't have any of the risk factors that we...
Well, we don't know. He could have smoked. He could have been an alcoholic.
Well, probably not. He wasn't overweight. We definitely think he was getting enough exercise, and he probably wasn't smoking or drinking. So, unfortunately, what this means is that we might be less able to prevent arteriosclerosis than we had thought.
Wow, how interesting. So what else did his genome tell us?
Well, Ötzi was also the first known carrier of Lyme disease. So now we know that Lyme disease has really plagued humans for thousands of years. And we also found out where Ötzi came from. So his mitochondrial DNA has been sequenced before, but that really just gave us information about the female line. Now after scientists sequenced the Y chromosome, we know that Ötzi is related to populations in Sardinia and Corsica, as well as some places in Georgia and Russia. And interestingly, we also know now what he looked like.
Oh, really?
Yes. So we know he had brown eyes, brown hair, and type O blood. And we also know that he was lactose intolerant, like most Neolithic Europeans.
Wow. So this is a lot of new information. Have we learned all that we can from him?
No, we haven't. Scientists are trying to compare Ötzi's Lyme disease pathogen with more modern versions and trying to figure out how Lyme disease evolves. And as the research that scientists are doing evolves, there's still a lot more that Ötzi could end up telling us.
Great. Well, I can't wait to hear more about it. And what else have we had on the site this week?
Well, on Science Now, you can read about the sequencing of the gorilla genome and how we're more related than we thought. And there's also new information about the elusive Higgs boson. Hmm. On Insider, we have a story about the biosecurity debate, about labs who work with engineered bird flu viruses, as well as one about a diesel lung cancer study that has finally been published after a 20-year dispute. And this week's Science Live, our weekly chat on the hottest topics in science, is the science of tiny critters, where we discuss the science of miniaturization in vertebrates. And don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook and on Twitter at Science Now.
Great. Thanks, Meghna.
Thank you.
Meghna Sachdev is a science contributor. You can check out all of our news at news.sciencemag.org, including daily stories from Science Now and science policy from Science Insider. While you're there, be sure to check out Science Live, a live chat on the hottest science topics every Thursday at 3 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time.